I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And here we are, tuning in love. Tune in love. I started that last week, and I'm just going to keep it going because I love it. Tune in live, tune in love. That's what we do during this hour. And we need a lot more love in this world. I think what we all need of, how does it go? What the world needs now, that's the only thing that there's too little of. Well, we're going to do a little more of it during this hour, just like sharing the love and putting the love out. Because it feels good. And I think we can be better as a society and a species when we take care of each other, when we serve each other, and when we put out love. Because there's a lot of hate going around, and we got to combat that. Or, we've got to, I don't want to use like a battle term, but we need to spread it around. So for those of you who are joining in for the first time or don't know very much about this program, I wanted to just give you a little background on me and the show. It's been a little over 6.5 years that It's All About Food has been on Progressive Radio Network, and I'm really grateful for all the Progressive Radio Network folks that make these programs possible. And we're here promoting a plant-based, healthy, vegan diet. And we're going to be talking a lot about that today. And I'm the founder of a nonprofit organization called Responsible Eating and Living. We're a multimedia organization, and we have so much information on our website. It's just overwhelming to me. I'm always thinking about how can I present this information in a better way as we keep putting more things up there. There are recipes and videos and food shows, and of course, all of the It's All About Food programs from the last 6.5 years are archived on the website. Most with transcripts, because I have these fabulous volunteers who transcribe these programs. Thank you very much. Sending love out to my transcribers. And one of the things that I really have fun doing, I don't know if you're familiar with analytics of websites, but I use Google Analytics, and it can tell you what your most popular pages are and how many people are visiting and where they're visiting from. Don't worry, it doesn't say who you are. It just gives you a general feeling. And I really get a little warm and cozy when I know there are people visiting the site, and I see them listening to, or I see you listening to interviews from a few years back, some that I've forgotten about, and I'm happy to remember. And I'm just glad that we have this digital library available for free for anyone who wants to find out all that needs to be found out about the healthy plant-based lifestyle that we're promoting here. And I'll pick more about all of that later on in the program. Okay, right now I want to bring on my guests, Michelle Schwegman and Josh Hooten. They are co-owners of the Herbivore Clothing Company, a vegan clothing cookbook and lifestyle store in Portland, Oregon, in their own vegan mini mall. And they're also online at herbivoreclothing.com. They were founded in 2002, and Herbivore makes clothing and accessories for people who like to fashionably proclaim their compassionate beliefs. Herbivore has published several books, including Yellow Rose Recipes and The Vegan Pregnancy Survival Guide. Josh and Michelle's book, Eat Like You Give a Damn, is a cookbook and guide for new ethical vegans. It is named for the popular slogan they've had for years and was named the Reader's Choice Favorite Cookbook by Veg News Magazine in 2015. And Josh and Michelle are parents to 10-year-old Ruby, whose daily vegan lunch you can see via the hashtag RubyBirdsLunch. Hey, Michelle and Josh, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Good to be here.
Good. I hear Michelle. Josh, are you there too?
I'm here. Hi.
Oh, woo-hoo-hoo! Okay. We're having a party.
We are.
Thank you for joining me and for writing this lovely book, Eat Like You Give a Damn.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's a very fun book. Now, it says on the front cover, recipes for the new ethical vegan. What about for the old ethical vegan like me? Can I use these recipes?
You know, it's really for anyone. It doesn't have to only be for ethical vegans. But we wanted to just put that out there, that's our approach. we are vegan because we love animals and we don't want to consume them and we know that we don't need to. And we want to make it okay to talk about the ethical aspect of veganism. Lots of people talk about the health aspect, and we wanted to talk about the animals because that's why we do what we do.
Well, talking about the animals is probably the most uncomfortable part of the conversation when we talk about eating plants versus animals. Makes people very squeamishy. And I know doing this for decades that the health aspect is probably the easiest way in because people are not exactly narcissistic, but they're concerned about themselves and taking care of themselves. And so that's like an approachable way, but we really need to dig deep and talk more about animals.
Yeah, I totally agree. The health thing is wonderful. It's a great side benefit for us personally, but we've always felt like, you know, we've all known people that weren't vegan that were healthy. So if you're trying to get healthy, that's one thing. If you're in a, like a if you're in a health emergency situation and you're doing this just because your doctor said that terrible things are going to happen if you don't, that's one thing. But if you're a healthy person and you eat meat, our push is much more on the ethical and environmental side, because that's when you internalize those things, that's still narcissistically really good for you. If you are helping the planet, you live on the planet.
Yeah.
So doing good things for the planet is still in your best interest.
That's an interesting point, and I don't think many people get that. That's kind of crazy. I mean, all the things that we do today are so destructive for the environment, and we're not connecting the dots very well, or we don't want to.
I think people don't want to connect the dots because it's uncomfortable, like you said. But what we're trying to do is show that, you know, being vegan isn't something that's threatening or scary. It's something that's fun. It's natural. It's simple to do. It's just a matter of adopting a new set of habits. And it's okay to be compassionate. It's okay to wear your heart on your sleeve and feel destroyed inside when you realize that everything you thought was true about what you eat was not true. You know, that's how we both felt when we learned the information we did that made us choose to be vegan. And so we want to be this, you know, friendly, fun hand to hold and, you know, cooking partner in the kitchen and just, you know, friend that can be there for you to help you along your journey and to show that it's not a weird thing to be vegan. And I think the world is seeing that so much more all the time, but this is our little slice of that pie, and this is how we've been doing it for a long time. So that's why we wrote the book.
Well, the crazy thing is that people think what they're doing today is normal, and that it's extreme to eat vegetables and not extreme to torture and slaughter billions of animals every year.
That is true.
And we're the scary ones. It's crazy.
But what we're trying to say is that, you know, sort of flip that on its head. It's like, this is, you know, when you look at me and look at a picture of me and my husband and my daughter and I and my family, we don't look like crazy weirdos. We just are normal people who are vegan, and we're fun to be around. You can invite us to your party. We're going to invite you to our house. And, you know, it's not something that's unapproachable. It's very normal.
Well, nobody else, you know, there's lots of other social justice issues that people don't get all weird about. Like, if I took a really hardline stance about women's rights, nobody's going to have a stereotype ready for me. They're mostly, at least where I live, are going to hear me out and understand and listen and care. Or if I was advocating
for
children.
Come on, you're in Portland, Josh. Come on.
Then let's say, like, something even more basic. Like, if I was advocating militantly for children to be treated better around the world, nobody would be like, oh God, this guy, like, his views are ridiculous. Look how extreme he is. It's not. It's just, you're just extending that circle of compassion to a different species. That's not strange. But people think that way and they react that way because they have to reflect on that, and they have to feel like, you know, I mean, obviously people feel guilty. I have felt guilty about animal stuff when I was not vegan. And one day I had to kind of sit myself down and sort of look at why I felt that way. And it was because I didn't think animals should be treated badly and tortured and killed and eaten. I didn't think that that should happen, but I was complicit. So
yeah. That's
where my pushback was coming from personally. And when I got my behaviors in line with my ethics, everything cleared up overnight. It was amazing. It was a great feeling.
Well, I love the way the book opens up with the introduction by an anonymous individual who did some undercover investigative work in Iowa in a pig factory farm.
Yes.
And it wasn't many pages, but it was intense reading and an interesting way to open a cookbook.
Our publisher thought the same thing. but that sort of sets the stage for the reason, which is what that piece is called, which is, you know, what we've been talking about is that, yes, you know, there's delicious food in here and, you know, yummy treats and decadent things and healthy things, and we're going to get to that. But the reason that we are even here, the reason that anyone is interested in anything that Josh or I have to say or any recipe that we've written is because of animals and because of the way animals are treated. And so here's a little bit of information that we have that we're privy to from an undercover investigator about, and this is why we're writing this book, because this doesn't have to happen anymore. And we can all be part of making the world a better place for humans and animals and the environment by not eating animals anymore. So it's definitely a non-traditional way, but we felt like it's who we are, it's why we're here, and it's the way we've done things. And if people are interested in how we eat and how we live, then they're going to get the whole picture.
So I don't think we're scary at all. And I think vegans, for the most part, tend to be phenomenal partiers, really big foodies, loving all kinds of food, and for the most part have a really good sense of humor. You kind of have to acknowledge what's going on in this world and still move forward. You have to have a good sense of humor. So I wanted to talk about when you first got started with Herbivore, one of the slogans you had on one of your T-shirts that you created was "Praise Satan."
Yeah, that was a number of years ago. You know, it's obviously it's a play on words. Not everybody actually still even today gets it, but it's Seitan is, you know, it's made from wheat gluten, it's or the wheat protein, and it's used a lot for kind of fake meat dishes. You can kind of flavor it however you want. It's a classic. It's you can do anything to it, and you can make ribs, you can make burgers, you can make sandwiches, you can make, you know, whatever you want. And it just happens to be called Seitan, so it's just sitting there waiting to be made fun of. So. I grew up in punk rock and heavy metal circles, and it was just kind of an easy, fun joke to make and to appeal to other people. You know, like back then, there was a real stereotype about vegans being all kind of earthy, crunchy hippie types, and we love them. But that's not who I am, and that's not who most of my friends are. So we were making clothes, and still are, for a variety of people. But one of the main people that we're making designs for is ourselves, because we know that we are a lot like our customers. And so that's kind of where that design came from.
And the next thing Michelle said, you know, early on, you said you were a cheese, French fry, and bagel vegetarian.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say that, you know, it's wonderful when people decide to give up meat, but that is actually one of the biggest dangers, to rely on white flour food, high starchy food, and cheese. It's really a recipe for so many illnesses. And I know we're not focusing on health here, but it's important to say. I mean, I had a very close friend who ended up being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Unfortunately, she got healthy and went vegan and never looked back. And doesn't have a problem, but this recipe, high starch, white flour food, and cheese is linked to so many devastating chronic diseases.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't stay that kind of a vegetarian.
I'm glad. Yeah. But it's so easy. I mean, that's what
it was.
It's,
It's what it's an odd step. If you think about it, it's what a lot of people eat. When they start eating that way when they're kids, and they continue to eat that way through their entire adult life, and it isn't sustainable, but it is, it is what a lot of people do. So, when I was that kind of vegetarian, it didn't stick with me. And then, I went back to eating animal products. That was when I was in high school. And when I did it the second time, I was an adult, and I still didn't know much about nutrition, but I knew that that wasn't a good idea. So at that point, I had learned to love salad a little bit more, I guess.
Yay.
So exactly.
Yay.
Yeah. But I will say I still consider myself a cheese lover, and I partake in all kinds of wonderful cheeses. They just happen to be made from plants these days, whether it's cashew cheese or coconut milk cheese or something that's made from tofu. We eat a lot of cheese in a vegan way, and we definitely are not missing out on anything. So it's pretty nice
That's right.
to be able to still be that way, but just kind of switch the angle a little bit.
Not only are you not missing out, but looking at your cookbook, it's clear that you're having a great party with food.
We eat a lot of really good food. We love to eat,
yeah.
And it's something that I've always loved to do. So when we went vegan, or when I went vegan, it was just a matter. It truly has opened up the world of food in such a different way than it did when I ate animals, because there's just, you're more interested. I'm more interested in different cuisines from other cultures or just different cooking techniques. And it's so much fun. And it's, I think, so much more creative than, I'm going to put some rub on this meat. I don't know, I don't even know how to fake being a meat eater anymore. It's kind of sad.
You both mentioned that Diet for New America by John Robbins had a great influence on you. And I love John. We're very good. I'm fortunate to have him as a close friend. And I work with him still with his Food Revolution Network. But mm-hmm. What's amazing about that book I found is how many people have read it and, like you, have gone on to continue to share the message in your own way.
Yeah, well, the thing I love about his writing and about his speaking is that you can like him, you can not like him. It doesn't make any difference. He tells you what's what in the world, and there's just no denying it. Like, when I read that book, I was vegetarian when I read that book. And I was just trying to figure out why I was vegetarian. I had been vegetarian kind of for social reasons, and I was like, I should probably learn more about these issues about why I don't eat animals. And I was like, oh, here's a book I'll read. I was reading it, and I was laying in my bed in Chicago in 1999, and I was laying there, and I was reading about eggs, and his tone is not judgmental, but he's not soft-selling it either. He just tells you what is going on. And mm-hmm. I was very apt to believe what he was saying, because he wasn't telling me to do anything. He was just saying, this is what the world is like, and if you are partaking this is what you are complicit in. And I knew, I'm laying there in my bed, and I'm reading the book, and I read about eggs, and I laid it down on my chest, and I was like, well, now I'm vegan. And I was not thrilled about that, because I didn't know how to be vegan. I wasn't even a very good vegetarian. But I couldn't unring that bell, I couldn't unread what I just read. And it had a lot to do with the way it was presented to me. I had, I had vegan friends at the time, and I had seen pamphlets and heard people talk about animals, but it didn't sink in until, I read it from him, and it made a big difference to me.
Well, Josh, I think that's because you really do give a damn.
That is true.
And I wish everyone did. So one more question before we start getting to the good stuff, the food. You have a great list of an FAQ section where you have answers to questions that people always ask. They've been asking them for decades. They'll probably continue to ask them for centuries. And I wanted to highlight my favorite one, which was, what would happen to all the cows and pigs if we didn't eat them? And I wanted to say, what is amazing about this question is last year, I was invited to speak to 250 cattle producers about climate change and animal agriculture, and I was on a panel. And when we were all done, this was one of the questions that these cattle producers asked me. What will happen?
Wow.
These are the ones who do the artificial insemination. These are the ones who breed, and they asked me. How incredible is that?
How did you answer?
I said, just stop in the artificial insemination, you know, stop making them, stop breeding them. And they were rolling their eyes and, oh my God, it was, I'm just glad I got out of there alive. But I like to say that they liked me. So it was a pretty interesting.
I hope they listened to what you said.
I really think I planted some seeds, but like I've said a number of times on this program, I think they're very scared and don't know what else that they can do. It's been in their lives for generations, and when you don't know how else you could feed your family, you don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like a kitten, you know, hide your eyes and nobody can see you.
Right. All right. Let's get to some of the wonderful things in your book. You have a great list, about more than 50 ingredients of things you can put on a salad. People
because,
have such,
you know,
a closed-minded view of a salad.
There will be no closed-minded views of salads in our world. Because, you know, everybody's like, I couldn't just eat salad all the time. But it's like, you know, there doesn't even have to be lettuce in your salad. Like, there doesn't. Reinvent it for yourself. So that's just, not an exhaustive list by any means.
Oh, I know. There's 50 ingredients, and I just quickly scanned it, and I saw, okay, you put apples and you put raisins, but there's like a gazillion other fruits that you could put on your salad, mangoes and blueberries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Party on the greens. Yeah, that's a good list and a very good point, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
Now, we do a lot of cooking, my partner Gary and I, and we post a lot of recipes, so I'm always looking to discover something new, and I love the crushed and crispy potatoes.
Those, we had those last night for dinner.
I've never crushed my potatoes like that.
It truly is like a dream. It's like a baked potato and a French fry all at once. And you don't have to use a lot of oil if you're looking out for that. And, you know, you can go crazy and put cheese on top if you want, or sour cream, but we usually just like dip it in ketchup or just eat it plain. And they're so great with a little, you know, salt, pepper, and olive oil on top. And it takes a little bit of time, but on a cold fall evening like we had last night here in Portland, it's great. The house smells amazing, and you know, it's all warm and cozy by the time you're eating dinner.
We make a lot of baked fries, either sweet potato fries or baked white potato fries, and, you know, cut them up like French fries and then put them in the oven and bake them, and they're great. But next time.
This is so much easier. And then you get that fun pleasure of just squishing it, which, I don't know, I like that part of it.
Okay, the next recipe
Take
was
out
right
your anger
next to
on
it.
The potato.
You're a potato girl?
Yes, and I'll flatten a potato.
and then mashed roots, which you include turnips and parsnips, which I don't think get enough press in today's modern world of food. They might have some time ago, and I knew that they use turnips and parsnips in different cultures in Europe and other places, but most people, I don't even think they know what they are, but they lend so much flavor.
And it's good to have variety. And, you know, we do that all the time with just make a bunch of different root vegetables and either mash them like we do in that recipe or just simply roast them. But it's nice to have something different because, you know, in America, I think French fries are the most commonly eaten vegetable. And, you know,
with the other vegetable, ketchup, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's another one of my favorites. But you know, this way you get a little bit of variety and a little bit more flavor, and it's, you know, it's not going to hurt you to try something new. And you never know. Parsnips are beautiful. They're just like white carrots.
They're lovely in all soups. They give really lovely depth and dimension. And
they do.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Take it from a vegan. Turn on to parsnips and turnips. Don't be afraid.
We know our veggies.
Yeah. And then the winner, okay, just because I've never seen it before and it's genius, is the ginger chili broccoli stalks.
Oh. Because genius. How many broccoli stalks do you have just withering away in your crisper, right?
Yeah. Now, I have to admit that I make a lot of green juice, and when I have broccoli stalks, I just cram them in the juicer and they become juice, but this is a good one.
It's a great recipe because we always have a ton of broccoli stalks sitting around, so we'll either make this or we'll use the broccoli stalks instead of celery in like a soup or something. But this way it's, you know, it's a whole meal in itself and you're like, wow, this is normally something that I would put in the compost and look at how delicious. Kind of like you're, you know, getting takeout.
Now there's a whole movement now about not wasting food. And I'm very amused by it because decades ago in the olden days at home and in restaurants, nobody wasted anything. And in restaurants, they knew how to not waste anything. They just made big piles of stock, but somehow they've forgotten. And now it's kind of a trendy thing to have a dinner made of wasted vegetables. But you can certainly enjoy these broccoli stalks. I have to confess, I probably made something just yesterday that I don't recommend for anyone, but I'm but I'm kind of enjoying it. So we eat a lot of greens here, and for our kale salads and collard greens, we remove the stalks, and the stalks kind of pile up in the crisper in the refrigerator until I make my weekly green juice, and I make a week's worth, and then I freeze them.
And, okay.
I wasn't going to be making green juice because I had plenty and there was this giant pile of stalks and I thought, what am I going to do with them? So I thought I'd make a big smoothie out of them. And it was a major event just to grind these stalks up, even in my Vitamix. And then I flavored it with peanut butter and cocoa powder. It wasn't very sweet, but I froze half of it because I can't waste this stuff. And I've been slowly chewing on this. I'm not even calling it a smoothie. I'm calling it a sludgy.
We have a phrase for that. You just say, is it good? And Josh will ask me, and I'll be like, I can choke it down.
Well, you can't. You have to chew this thing. It's like intense dose of fiber. But I think your broccoli stalks are really good at. All right, the last recipe I want to mention. Now, people have to know that vegans are foodies. We love our food and we love our treats. And because we're eating nutritious food, plant foods, which have all the things like phytochemicals and fiber and all the good things you don't get in animal foods, we're allowed to eat our dessert and not be guilty about it. And you've got a cappuccino orange chocolate chip cookie. How good is that?
It's amazing. And I have to admit, that is a recipe that came from a friend of mine who is a fellow Portlandian and fellow cookbook author named Julie Hassan. And because I needed help with the desserts section of the book because I'm one of the weird people in the world that doesn't really have a sweet tooth.
Mm.
So, I'm give me a loaf of bread and some olive oil, and I'm happy. That's my dessert. So I asked a couple of friends that are excellent bakers, and that she gave me a recipe that's very similar to that one. I simplified it a little bit, but it is extraordinary. And when I gave one of the cookies to my neighbor, she like took a bite of it, and her eyes kind of like popped out of her head, and she said, "This is going to be worth the price of the book alone."
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can't wait to try them. It just sounded so good. I'm not
They're
a big
really
coffee
good.
Drinker, but I love the flavor of coffee in sweets.
And it's just enough. It goes with all of the other ingredients in such a way that you miss it if it's not there, but you it's not overwhelming at all. So it's really a great recipe. We love
them. Okay. Can I keep you a few minutes longer and ask you a few more questions, or are you in a hurry?
We've got a few more moments.
Okay, good. So you have a daughter. She's 10 years old.
Yes.
And what's it like feeding Ruby?
You know, Ruby loves to eat. She's like her mom and dad. So, you know, I think that maybe we have it a little bit easier than people that have more picky kids. But we like to think that it's because we've always given her such variety. You know, she has always been willing to try something at least once, and we allow her to not like things. Like, for example, she does not like spinach. Okay. Mm. You don't have to eat spinach. She loves kale. She loves collards. She loves romaine lettuce. So I'm not going to force the kid to eat spinach, you know? So it's, you know, with her, it's been pretty fun. And, you know, we have always had cooking be a family event. We're usually hanging out around the kitchen in our house. And, you know, she loves to make pancakes and she loves to, you know, help in the kitchen. So, I just encourage people to don't give up on your kids and allow them to have likes and dislikes. And if they see you eating a wide variety of foods and you are a healthy person and you put good things in your body, you know, strong foods and treats foods, you know, things have different meanings, that they'll eventually have a good variety and good diet themselves. So
was she raised vegan from birth?
Yes. Yeah. I was vegan when I was pregnant. So, you know, she's never known anything different. So
Beautiful. It's
just a wonderful, you know, it's lovely for us now because it's just who she is. It's part of, you know, her person. So she's doesn't feel peer pressure or feel like she's missing out, because she's not missing out on anything. And we do make sure that she isn't missing out, you know, at things like parties and stuff like that, which are, you know, important for kids. They
want
to be part of the team, you know. They want to have a cupcake too.
Does she like to preach? Is she a future activist?
You know, she definitely has times when she's like that. And it's hard for her to express, I think, sometimes, because she doesn't understand why people eat animals when she knows that it's not necessary. It's kind of confusing to her.
Me too.
You know, and you know, she's very in touch with that. She was, you know, only one time, thankfully, have we ever seen a truck on the highway that had a lot of birds, of chickens on their way, obviously, to a slaughterhouse. Mm. And she was so upset by it. And she was like, "Mom, call the police, call the police.
Aww.
We should turn them in. They can't do that.
Oh,
not right."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh gosh, wouldn't that be great if we could just, you know, call someone and say, these people are breaking the law." But, you know, it's hard to explain those kinds of realities, but I think it helps her have a solid foundation for why she believes what she believes, because she knows the truth.
She hasn't been made numb.
No, she has definitely not been made numb.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Lovely. Okay, well, one last thing. I want to direct people over to herbivoreclothing.com, where you've got all kinds of fun things. What are the most popular items on your Herbivore Clothing website?
Let's see. Well, we do all our own designs, and the most popular ones that we've got going right now, we just did a new one that just came out a couple of days ago that is a orca whale, and it says "Set Them Free." And it's very clearly about SeaWorld and captive animals that we put in small little enclosures for our own entertainment. We think that's very wrong. And it's this orca that's kind of jumping, and it's very festive, and it's meant to look very alive and free. We always try to focus on the positive sides of things, or positive outcomes, as opposed to depressing people. But that one's a very popular one. We have one that we call the Good Luck Elephant design, which is a design we did a few years ago that is just an elephant, and it says herbivore with kind of a decorative surrounding. And that one is just about the largest land mammal that's an herbivore, which are elephants. You know, people talk about your protein and whatever, forgetting, of course, that the largest land animal is an herbivore. That one's always popular. We have that one on a few different garments. Those are the two that I think right now are the hits right now.
Very good. Well, Josh and Michelle, thank you for joining me, and it's all about food. I can't wait to get out to Portland sometime and check out your store.
Please come and visit.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the chance to be on.
Because Portland is an awesome place to eat.
For sure.
Indeed.
Yes. Okay, be well, and thank you for tuning in some love with me today on It's All About Food.
Thank you. Have
Bye-bye.
A great day.
Okay. So that was Michelle Schwegman and Josh Hooten, authors of the new cookbook, Eat Like You Give a Damn, and you can visit them at herbivoreclothing.com. Wasn't that fun? Okay, let's take a couple minutes break, and we'll be right back.
This is Mike Fader, host of The Turning Point and Occupied Territory, and you're listening to PRN.FM, your very best source for progressive programming.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Baker. Join me Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for the Lifeboat Hour. Formerly hosted by the late Michael Rupert, the Lifeboat Hour, now hosted by me, focuses on creating internal and external resilience to fortify us in turbulent times. Our guests, music, and call-ins make for a show that you will want to keep on your calendar and share with your friends. For the finest in resilience radio, join us at the Lifeboat Hour on Sunday nights at 9 Eastern.
Hi, I'm Bhavani, and I'd like to invite you to tune into my show, I Eat Green, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. to hear the latest news about our health, the environment, and the good food movement. I'll also share with you one of my favorite recipes, so tune in on Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Listening to PRN Progressive Radio Network.
This is Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. So let's continue talking about my favorite subject, food. And I wanted to discuss an article that just came out recently. I'm looking at the date. It doesn't look as recent as I thought it was. There's been, here it is, March 2015. And it's about, there's been a little bit of a buzz around it on my Facebook page with other colleagues, and the title of the article is Legumes and Meat Analog Consumption Are Associated with Hip Fracture Risk Independently of Meat Intake Among Caucasian Men and Women, the Adventist Health Study 2. So this was an interesting study. It was one of those things where they take big populations of people and they have them answer surveys every few years, and then they try and glean some information about it. You know, it's so hard and expensive to really find out what the ideal diet is and what the impact of different foods are on human health. And we certainly are capable of consuming a lot of different things. If you look around the world, people eat so differently. But in this study, it came out and said that hip fractures are reduced by 64% when people have one or more servings of legumes per day. That's beans, my friend, beans, and all different kinds of beans. And you can significantly reduce your risk of hip fracture by 64%. And next in line was meat analogs, and that includes soy foods. They separated those from legumes, and they found that there was a 49% reduced risk of fracture. Say that quickly, reduced risk, reduced risk of fracture compared to those eating it less than once a week. And eating meat as well showed a reduction in hip fractures compared to those who ate very little. And the point of the article is saying that protein is important, plant or animal protein, even though plant protein fared better in reducing risk. But I wanted to point out something that I thought was really important in the article, and it's not as obvious, because the article also says that vegans have the highest risk of hip fractures. And so I was confused. How can that be if beans and meat analogs that are soy-based or wheat-based, like seitan, praise seitan, how is it that vegans who are eating these foods can have a higher risk of hip fractures if they are indeed supposed to reduce hip fractures? This is where it gets kind of confusing and crazy. And I actually asked Brenda Davis, dietitian. We've had her on this program before. And she said, and I'm just going to read exactly what she said. This is not surprising, as vegans have the lowest protein intake. The study is really showing that protein is important for bone health, and vegans consuming more do better. It is also important to remember that the EPIC Oxford study showed a 30% increase in fracture risk in vegans compared to non-vegetarians and lacto-ovo-vegetarians. However, vegans consuming at least 525 milligrams of calcium had no greater risk than anyone else. And almost half of the vegans consumed less than that in that particular EPIC Oxford study. But the point is that many nutrients are important to bone health include protein and calcium. So vegans show reduced risk of many chronic diseases, but when you want to have strong bones, you're going to need to get sufficient protein and calcium. And we want to get calcium from food. And you can Google calcium in food, but there are wonderful foods that contain calcium, and you just want to make sure you get a lot. And that's why I eat a ton of kale, because calcium is loaded with calcium. There's like 100 milligrams per cup, give or take. I don't know what exactly it is. So when I have a big salad, which is about 6 cups of kale, I'm getting plenty of calcium. Tofu, too, especially when it's processed with a, what is it made with? Calcium. I'm slipping here right now, but tofu can have a lot of calcium in it. Some raw nuts and seeds and beans are loaded with calcium. When you stick whole foods, minimally processed, stay away from the highly processed foods, and you're eating plant-based, then you're a winner. So I just wanted to bring that up in case anybody starts waving this in your face saying, vegans have high risk of hip fracture. Not if we get enough calcium. And make sure that you do get enough calcium. And the other piece of that is exercise, because you can't have strong bones if you don't have strong muscles. They work together. That means running, jumping, playing, having a good time, using your body, and moving a lot. And if you're stuck at a desk job, make sure every hour you get up and move around. Or if you can, work standing up for a period of time and then sitting down. Move, vary it. It's important. It's important for your health. It's important for your bones. I went traveling this week. I went to Chicago was actually for a memorial service, so I can't say that it was a fun adventure, but I did make the most of it, and I met up with a woman that I met in sixth grade because we were going to the memorial of a teacher that we had met when we were both 11 years old, and we had both remained friends with him for the last 46 years. And so while it was difficult mourning and grieving, I did get to reconnect with someone who I haven't seen in 46 years, and that was really fascinating for me. And for a while, we sat at an Argo tea store. Have you been to one of these Argo tea shops? One of the great ways to catch up with someone is to sit and sip tea, and that's exactly what we did. And it was a windy, cold day, and we actually sat outside drinking our tea. But what I love about Argo tea is it's like a candy store for me. They have so many selections of different kinds of tea, all in bulk. You know how crazy I am when it comes to tea bags. I just don't like tea bags. Occasionally I'll have a tea that is brewed through a tea bag, but I prefer not to. And this place is all loose leaf teas. And they had one of my very favorite teas that I don't see very often called Mate Latte, which is a mate tea, if you've ever tried yerba mate, which originates from Uruguay. And it has a low level of caffeine. Some people call it matin, I think, from mate. And it's really a lovely tea. And it just brought back so many memories. The first time I had it was when I was traveling on business to Burlingame, Vermont. And I used to stay at this little hotel that actually had a vegan chef, and this was in the late 90s, I think. Very unusual vegan chef, Chef Kevin Dunn. And so the menu had some delightful items on it, including mate latte. And even though it has latte in the name, it's not dairy milk, although you can have it with almond milk or coconut milk. It's really, really delicious. So that was a nice thing. The other exciting thing I wanted to tell you about, again, every story has its bright side and its dark side. I was actually visiting a relative who's in the hospital for ovarian cancer. And since I had ovarian cancer back in 2006, 2007, the least that I can do is be as supportive as I can, providing as much information as I can, or just being cheery. And I went over to Memorial Sloan Kettering, which is a big cancer hospital here in New York. I have to admit, it's not my favorite hospital. I didn't have good experiences there when I consulted with a number of doctors. but she showed me the menu, and they have vegetarian and vegan options, and a lot of them. The world is changing. Now, I know this is New York City, and it's going to take a while for other hospitals to follow suit, but this is so encouraging. Isn't it the craziest thing? You go into a hospital to heal, especially if you have cancer, and they're feeding you foods that cause cancer, like sugar, like dairy, like pork, all these cancer-causing foods, and those are the things they want you to eat. It's crazy. So the encouraging thing is things are changing, and for those that want it, you can have it. And that's the importance of screaming and whining. maybe not screaming and whining, but at least speaking up and asking politely is probably best rather than screaming and whining. But asking for things, if you're in a hospital, asking for the foods that you want to eat and requesting not to be given the foods that you don't want to eat. I remember, even though I kept saying I'm a vegan and I don't want these things, there was always a little dish of sugar and non-dairy creamer on my tray, no matter how many times I said I don't want these things. So if we keep politely asking and requesting for the things that we want, maybe sometimes you have to step it up a notch and be a little more demanding. Change will happen. We can't be meek about this because it's important. It's important for our health. It's important for our planet. Okay. looking at my notes here, all the things that I wanted to talk about. I wanted to remind you again, I said I'm going to be bringing this up a number of times. If you haven't seen my documentary, The Lone Vegan, Preaching to the Choir, and even if you have seen it, I hope you will go to cultureunplugged.com. If you need the link, you can go to my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, to get it. But I'm clicking on it now just to make sure I get the right website here. It is cultureunplugged.com, cultureunplugged.com. There's this fabulous film festival. It's going on till the end of the year. And really, you could watch a lot of films up here. They're all free. And, you know, if you're listening to Progressive Radio Network, which I know you are, these are the kind of films you're going to want to see. And they're from all over the world. And if you watch For Lone Vegan, Preaching to the Fire, and rate it, well, you can help us maybe become a winner, because we'd like to win or be a winner. And we need to have more people watch it. So the film that has the most people watch it gets the prize. So please help us out and check out cultureunplugged.com. Watch our film, rate it too, and that'll be a big help. The other thing I wanted to mention is I am now offering private coaching. I've done it for quite some time now, but I'm being a little more public about it. And if you're interested in private coaching, this is where I talk to you either by phone or by Skype, and we discuss individual issues with food and get you to a better place. I love doing this, and I would be happy to help. So you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and click on the right side and find out more about my private coaching program. I just found I think it's necessary, so I'm putting it out there. And we cover a wide range of things. Some people want to simply eat more plant foods and don't know how. People go through a health crisis, and I bring my own personal experience because I had advanced ovarian cancer, and most people don't survive advanced ovarian cancer. And not only did I survive, but I'm thriving. Thank goodness. But it's not by accident. It's because I dug deep. I did the research. I was fortunately connected with so many people in the alternative health movement, and I put together a plan that saved my life. I just want to share that with anyone who's interested and needs that kind of help. So there's the private coaching program. I also invite you to visit What Vegans Eat if you haven't. One of the things I'm so excited about, I don't know if you remember, but I used to talk about this restaurant in my neighborhood called Simple Veggie. We even did a video about them. It was really exciting because they're a vegan Chinese restaurant, and they came to my neighborhood a little over almost 2 years ago. And then they were selling the restaurant, which was very sad, kind of meant that maybe they weren't doing so well. I'm not really sure. But they sold it to a wonderful group. And now we have Green Zenfany, and it is phenomenal. It's vegan Chinese. If you're ever in the Forest Hills, Rego Park, Queens area, this is a must visit for really wonderful, fresh, delicious food. And you know that Queens is the number one travel destination for 2015, named by Lonely Planet. So if you have not been to New York City and the borough of Queens, I encourage that you do so and check out Green Zenfany. What was nice is I talked to the owner, Wendy, because I remember when she had a restaurant called Green Melody, which was on Long Island maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago now. Can't remember how long it was. Before they had that restaurant, they had a different restaurant. I think it was called Green Symphony, which was north of Manhattan, upstate New York. Well, what she told me was they retired. And then people were basically saying, no, you've got to come back. So they came out of retirement, and now they're right down the street from me, and I can have these wonderful big bowls of veggie soup. If you go to responsibilityandliving.com and click on What Vegans Eat Day 27, you can see these stunning pictures of soup with my favorite veggie duck, which is made from a bean curd skin and filled with mushrooms. It is so, so good. And I was kind of actually encouraged. You know, I like to eat a whole foods, minimally processed, plant-based diet. And there's some negativity surrounding these meat analogs, those people that are really on a health path. But what was encouraging from this article that I was just mentioning about protein and its effect on bones, it was a positive benefit of some of these meat analogs because they are high in protein. They're good for bone health. So, you know, occasionally having a meat analog, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And if you like it, enjoy it. It's so much better than the other version, which is an animal that's been slaughtered, right? I think so. Yeah, I love talking about food. And, I'm looking at these pictures right now, and I'm not hungry. I'm not hungry because before the show started, I had some of that sludgy that I was talking about before, these ground up collard stalks and kale stalks with little peanut butter and cocoa powder and water. Crazy little thing, but very filling, along with lentils. You know, sometimes I just like to cook lentils because they're quick and I eat them plain. They're fabulous. I don't know. I just love eating this way. Simple, clean, good, makes me feel happy. And if you want to feel happy and eat delicious foods, you can visit responsibilityandliving.com. We've got wonderful recipes. Or maybe you want to try the Eat Like You Give a Damn cookbook. There's some really fun recipes in there. I recommend them. Other than that, please send me an email at info@realmeals.org whenever you get the chance. I'd love to hear from you. Ask me whatever questions and comments you may have. And don't forget to watch our Lone Vegan Preaching to the Fire at Culture Unplugged. Okay? Other than that, have a delicious week. Thanks for tuning in the love. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food.